Right now, it is time to bring in David Terachuk. It's time for the Media Beat. David, of course, appears here live on a Friday morning. We broadcast Dave during the weekend and also David on our noontime block the following week. You can also get this on podcast form at robinhoodradio.com. Click on On Demand. Click on the Media Beat with David Terachuk. He has his own webpage, which is themediabeat.us. And also posts at the Huffington Post. And he is a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief. And he's got the nice job this week, and that is being at South by Southwest. David, good morning.
Good morning from Austin, Texas, the capital of the great state of Texas, and, of course, the home of South by Southwest festivals. Yeah, where else would I be in March? Maybe 3 degrees for you in northwest Connecticut. It's in the 70s for us today, we're promised, maybe even touching the 80s.
So what is, before we get into the, well, we can get into all the other stuff, but for people now, what do you do now when you're down at the South by Southwest for people that are just joining in and know that this is a terrific annual event that seems to grow each year?
It grows, and it offers enormous numbers of choices. We're here for 10 days, or some of us. I'm not going to spend the whole time here, but you have three main strands. It began, this thing, this extraordinary thing that is South by Southwest, some 30 years ago as a music festival, and along the way it picked up a film festival along with that, and much more recently, something like, 18 years ago now, so it's not that new, there's a what's called South by Southwest Interactive, which means all things internet related. So the place is dominated by geeks. One of the great pleasures I get here is to go to the Austin Convention Center, where it is centered. South by Southwest now takes over the entire city, but the core of it is at the Austin Convention Center, and the vast escalators there, carrying people up and down the various floors, where most of the real big name events happen. And it's wonderful just to share those escalators with people who are an awful lot younger than me, I have to say, and with a lot more hair. And the color of hair, ranging from green to purple, is a great thing to see. Young, experimentally minded geeks in the main. It's just a great experience. And the events this year are they're manifold. I wouldn't really know where to start. As I say, there's a mixture of film, internet, and music, and what a great mixture that is. But the sort of subjects that get tackled in the sessions here, because they're not only performances, not only screenings, not only demonstrations of interactive technology, but lots of discussion. So there are sessions in just about every building, publicly accessible building in the city, and so the themes of what's being discussed here are just so much in tune with the times. It's a smorgasbord. what else could I say?
And it's also kind of a gathering place for media also. I think that's the big offshoot of it. How many media people across the country, I'm talking about new media, not necessarily old media.
Old media come as well. I mean, there are various, one of the new catchphrases, well, not so new, it's been used for several years now, but they talk a lot about convergence between the different strands of South by Southwest, and also the headings under which topics are approached are now talked about as various tracks. And of course, media is one of the big tracks. So you get people from every strand of new media, of course, but it draws in traditional legacy media, if you like that word, So there's a big, hefty presence of, you know, boring old media people like me. the Reuters is here in strength. They're actually running a session, which I'm going to go to later today. I wish I'd seen it. I wish it had happened that I'd taken it in before I talked to you. It looks really, really interesting. Two people from Reuters are going to be examining the phenomenon, the disturbingly growing phenomenon of not just fake news, but fake video news, going into great detail into the growing capacity for people to create totally phony stories, but make them really convincing with video of real people, real famous people, real important authoritative people, and turn them into things, turn them into, you know, showing these people to be doing things and saying things that they've never done or never said. And that's an extraordinary new step along the way of fakeifying, of falsifying the news information that we get.
Yeah, it's and you know what, with today's modern technology, it really, you have to keep your eye out to see things that have been edited too, because it's just amazing what you can do nowadays just with your phone, never mind anything else.
Sure, sure. and the so-called democratizing of the means of production has come to mean that, everybody can, you know, make a passable forgery. But of course, there are always traces left when you don't, you know, when you are messing with reality. And one of the things I think we may get established as a strain of media literacy, which is so important to us, is educating people in how to spot things that have been changed and falsified.
All right. So now I've let you off easy talking about South by Southwest, where you are. And now I want to give you my opinion and ask you. I did watch last night some of the coverage of the announcement of the Manafort actually sentence. And they were talking, you know, the terms of 19 to 24 years. And I understood that right away, that that's the maximum term. I mean, if prosecutors got what they wished, they wanted that. That there's no doubt about it. Prosecutors wanted that. And then when it came out that Paul Manafort has been sentenced to basically 4 years in jail in this particular thing. Plus, people forget he's been in jail almost a year now. On top of that, he's been in jail almost a year. So he's 70 years old. And I saw the outrage on all the different networks about the length of the sentence.
Except perhaps Fox News. I don't think Fox News was so outraged.
But the thing that outraged me wasn't the sentence, length of sentence. I mean, he's going to be 75 when he gets finished with this sentence, and he's got a 10-year sentence waiting that he's going to be getting next week. To see, you know, so in essence, between those two sentences, it's going to be almost like a life sentence. There's, if he gets 10 years, he'll be 85 by the time he can get out of jail.
Yeah, there's still a possibility that Paul Manafort, as former campaign manager of the Trump campaign, may end up dying in prison. That's true. It's not as light a sentence as some of the reactions seem to suggest it might be.
No, and he might get a pardon. But if he gets a pardon, he still faces a whole series of charges in New York. But here's the thing that did upset me. The judge said that Paul Manafort had led basically a good life up until this point. And I
blameless
life.
Now
that's if he would have kept that out, I would have been a very happy camper. Paul Manafort has not led a blameless life. I mean, we all have our trials and tribulations, but this man conspired and took money illegally from countries that we were against. So he wasn't a blameless person going into this, but all this hubbub over a 70-year-old man's years in jail seemed to me to be rather moot at this point. The judge did it. That's what judges can do in sentencing. And the judge in Washington will do what she wants to do. She'll figure it out and do what she wants to do. I just think media has to calm down so people You know, everybody blames Trump for getting on the judiciary. Well, the media was just as bad last night. He made a bad statement.
It's not necessary. I just want to interject and say the way that it is morphed this morning is even more annoying, I'm sure, to certain sides. And I think that one of the bigger problems is that there's no form for covering, there's no format for covering nuance. You know, it's not necessarily the province of any news.
I just figure they should have covered this like they, and David, you can join in here, like they cover Supreme Court decisions. When Supreme Court decisions are covered by Supreme Court reporters, and I'll say by Supreme Court reporters that have been doing it for 20 or 30 years, like Nina Totenberg, there's no emotion involved longer in the delivery. They just give you what the court said and their interpretation of why they said it, and that's it.
Yes, and what I'm saying is, unfortunately, the format doesn't support the format no longer. And I'm interested, is anyone talking about this? And I'm fascinated, David, also by the deep fakes. People really are going to, people are going to have to start paying attention. And there's something that I've noticed, but there's something I want to ask you first, and that is, is there discussion about the fact that the audience has sort of veered away from the format no longer serves the audience?
the format of what?
The format of cable news, for example. I mean, it's great to sell drugs.
Well, I
don't mean
drugs. Wonder about that.
Pharmaceuticals.
I wonder about that. I'm not sure. Is the short way of answering that, because so many things are trending in different directions. One of the things I think that has gone missing amongst all the extraordinarily, as you were both saying, I think, the overheated media reaction to the judge's sentencing of Paul Manafort is that that prized commodity that you often talk about, Jill, the context seemed to fly out of the window.
Yeah,
there is the context, yes, as Marshall was saying, of the other case that is going in parallel in Washington with a different judge and different set of charges. That sentence is still to come in, and it could well be a sentence of 10 years. The other context is that federal guidelines that could have taken you up to 18 or 20 years in the sentence that Manafort got. It are only guidelines, and there is always room. There is always room in legal circles, this is well known, for downward adjustment as well as upward adjustment by an individual judge who has discretion. And the other part of the context that everyone seems to have forgotten is the judge himself, the judge's discretion, and the fact that this particular judge has a very long history of being, let's say, at the very least, very individual in his conduct of cases. He's been particularly idiosyncratic in his presiding over this particular case, and has made no secret of the fact that he doesn't have an awful lot of respect for the prosecutors involved in it and the decisions that they've been taking and the way that they've been conducting their prosecutorial case. So as ever, you end up with poor coverage because of basic lack of context. And when the audience, as you're suggesting, might be diverging from the source now, I think it's because people are not getting hip to what's missing. But there's a vague uneasiness about what they're being fed. And they, you know, as I think I've said many times over about the very first piece of advice I ever got in this business, from a boss of mine decades ago now, he said very clearly, never underestimate the intelligence of your audience, but never overestimate their knowledge either. You've got to accept that you have most of the time, the audience is very, very smart. And they can make up their own minds about your own deficiencies as a communicator.
Yes, but and the part that... it's going to sound like a minor divergence. Yesterday in the legacy media, and this is what I just went over the edge, was all about this week it's R. Kelly and how Gayle King did such a good job. And then she did all the night shows last night. And there are actually people out there, real live audience, you know, people who purchase advert, just regular people who are so done with the destroy a person, you know, who gets cooked this week. And
sure, there is one of the least edifying sites is the American media piling on an individual, and very often the individuals can have done despicable things, and they can be exhibiting despicable characteristics and despicable character. But yeah, there is something that sort of makes the needle waver considerably when you see everybody piling on, as I say, and it is certainly not edifying. And I can understand why you might feel that there's a mismatch between what the audience wants and what the sources are giving them.
And just the continued and relentless division of what the audience wants, the mocking of the intelligent, each side basically sort of implies that their audience is superior to the other audience. So there's a...
Oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah,
pandering. I think it's called pandering.
Is that what pandering means? It's just, it's really...
Well, trying to suggest that your circle is in the know, and... yes, the obvious implication, often broadly stated, saying that the other side's audience are full of cretins.
Yeah, and that's never I'm old, as I frequently say, and while everyone knows that I'm not the most tolerant person, especially when it comes to cretinism. Sorry, little known fact about me. So patient.
It's nice to hear it said out loud. Yes.
But that being said, I make an effort not to say to the person who is behaving, in my view, cretinously, gee, you're too stupid to live, so why don't you just go away? You know, because
yeah,
it's really hard to get anything done.
There's distinct flavor of vituperative exchange is, of course, it's the curse of cable television. And, of course, the web. I mean, chat rooms and tweets and so much of what is supposedly public discourse. It is public. Everyone can see it, or many, many, many people can see it, at least. It would be interesting, just as a sidelight on this, it would be interesting to see what Facebook ends up actually doing under this new regime promised yesterday by the leader of Facebook, and I use that word advisedly too, our great leader in the Facebook Inc. is promising us now a Facebook devoted to privacy rather than the public forum now.
Well,
so
that's okay.
It'll be interesting to see how that goes.
All the data's gone. I mean, it's like, sure, it's a perfect...
We have nothing more to offer.
We
may as well retreat from the public square, as the leader once called it, back to what he's now calling the living room. It will be very interesting to see how Facebook makes that 180-degree turn.
What really adds to the pilot on mentality of almost every news story is the fact that with cable news networks, there's a 24-hour news cycle, and now with social media, cable networks and regular normal networks watch social media for reaction and then bring that social media reaction into the normal media, and that's almost like putting wood on a fire that's going, so you let it go out? No.
You just throw
a few more logs on it, and it keeps going. And that's the real problem is that social media now has combined with networks to almost be like, and it makes it the most unfortunate of situations.
It's a real bad
one big news cycle, and 3/4 of it on social media is BS. That's the problem.
And what it does, going back to the deep fake lecture that Reuters is giving, that David is going to, it makes it impossible. You know, like you are truly standing there blanking in the wind if you think that you can show people. If you can, you don't. It has to be increasingly graphic to get people's attention. And so now, if you're saying, "Oh, by the way,"
sure, yeah, your currency of outrage and your currency of sensation gets very devalued, of course, as you keep on using it, and you exaggerate and you tabloidize even more. You inevitably end up there's a limit to how much you can shock. And in the end, people just get tired. And I suspect you're right. With that kind of tiredness setting in, people turn away.
And you've got, unfortunately, this is a time where you would be, where information would be more beneficial than ever. Now, we're going to run out of
time. We need accurate reporting
exactly.
Now more than ever.
And so...
And it's becoming less and less hard to find. Less easy to find.
And that's the problem. So people think that what they're getting is okay, and the fact is, it's got preservatives and additives, and it's not so great for you. As an aside, though, and Marshall is well aware of this. I'm waiting for there are some traditions of journalism and reporting that I believe are still being maintained. It would just be really helpful if younger kids were trained and encouraged to do that instead of encouraged to chase after the what's zipping around on the on their device.
Sure. Sources are vital to all journalism, and it's been a while now since I taught at Columbia Journalism School, but what has happened in the interim is that yes, indeed, social media has become one of the main sources, especially for cable news. But the important thing that is taught to young journalists now is that social media, of course, is a source. It can't not be a source. It's there. It's very real. It's used by so many people. It's part of the national discourse, whether we like it or not. It's a source, but it is only a source. And it needs, like every other source, it needs to be cross-checked with others. And that's part of the training. I mean, that's part of the training for the practitioners, and I think it needs to be part of the training for the audiences too. And that's what that's an essential part of media literacy now. Yeah, we may have seen that in a tweet, and we should be following it up. But for heaven's sake, the second step we have to take is to cross-check it with another reliable source as well. And if it doesn't bear it doesn't pass muster after that, then we don't run it until we have got it double-checked by another source.
Thank you very much, David Tereshchuk. The Media Beat.
Thank you.